My name is David Livingston. I've been researching conspiracy for about 30 years now, and I've written 5 books. My latest is Ordo Ab Kel, which is a 6-volume work. I've been astounded that for all the time that I've been researching this topic, I thought I'd done a pretty thorough job into my previous books, but I was really surprised to see how much new information I was able to find. So a large part of that is the fascist side of the conspiracy. And one figure pretty largely in the final 2 volumes of my book, the latest book, Ordo Ab Kel, is Alexander Dugin.
So David, before we get into this latest development, can you just explain what you mean by conspiracy? Because we hear this term conspiracy theory all the time.
Well, conspiracy theory obviously is a term that's used to try to discredit the study of conspiracies. So it's very immature to suggest that human politics evolve or take place without conspiracies, because tendencies to criminality happen everywhere you have human beings, particularly human beings who are exposed to the tools of power. So, you know, conspiracies happen all the time. Basically, wherever you have means of authority, means of population control, inevitably you're going to have some people who are going to try to use it for their own particular ends, who will act in secret because, of course, they'll be concerned about their actions being exposed. So, you know, it's ridiculous. Like I said, it's ridiculous to suggest that conspiracies don't exist. They always have. They always will. It's important for societies to be aware that they have, just like that, they have to monitor all other kinds of criminality. They also have to monitor those who are involved in politics and those who have access to political power, to make sure that there are not actions that are taken at the detriment of the rest of the society. So a lot of this stuff is treated in the mainstream, you know, educational system or the media as being fringe topics. But fortunately, there is a lot of information. This is why it's not conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy research. There are a lot of academic studies, you know, well-founded by qualified scholars that reveal a lot of the true happenings as far back in ancient times and even in more recent events.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned fascist conspiracies, because anybody that even starts to scratch the surface of mainstream news coverage will know that after the Second World War, the Nazis didn't just vanish, that a lot of them were actually recruited by the new Central Intelligence Agency, and even before that, the US intelligence services, because they were becoming very useful in the Cold War against the Soviet Union. So the idea that fascism has just disappeared, I mean, there doesn't really seem to be much of a modern critique of the fascist international. That is to say, you know, the fascist around the world working together behind the scenes for their own benefit, effectively to privatize the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Corporatism. So, I mean, it's happening everywhere, and it's basically where the conspiratorial direction is being taken. And the sad thing is, and this is a large part of what I expose in my book, which is what I call the conspiracy, is that for the most part, where the propaganda begins is in conspiracy circles. That for the most part, this fascist international, as it's called, has been largely responsible for the dissemination of a particular understanding or interpretation of the conspiracy that has been popularized and repeated. And it's a very simplistic, sort of narrow version of the conspiracy that effectively prevents people from understanding how it's really taking place. One of the most important, probably the umbrella organization of this fascist conspiracy is the Circle, Le Cercle Pinet, founded by Antoine Pinet and Jean Viollet. I think a year before the founding of Bilderberg, Jean-Antoine Pinet was also one of the founding members of the Bilderberg Group. Another founding member was Otto von Habsburg. And this is where it's really important, because Otto von Habsburg is from a long line of descent, of course, of the very influential Habsburg dynasty, as well as the Grand Master of the Order of the Golden Fleece. And that's another topic that's central to much of the history of my book, beginning with the orders after the survival of the Templars, the founding of the Rosicrucians, and then, you know, much of the development of the Western occult tradition. And so what's interesting is that Antoine Pinet was also a friend of a man named Raymond Abellio. That was his pen name, who, along with his friend, pupil, Jean Parvulescu, were effectively the two occultists from the Synarchist tradition who contributed to the mythology of the Priory of Zion mythos, which, of course, was popularized by Dan Brown in his Da Vinci Code. Now, Jean Parvulescu was then in turn a mentor of Alexander Dugin.
What you seem to be suggesting there is that the conspirators are so far ahead of the game that they're actually putting out conspiracies themselves to send people off in the wrong direction.
Yes. So this is a tactic that goes right back to the early 1900s, because you can effectively trace the beginnings of this fascist conspiracy. I mean, it has many tentacles, but this particular mission, I guess you could call it, dates back to a guy named Boris Brassall, who was a triple agent, worked for the British and the Russians, particularly the White Russians. And he was the one who was responsible for popularizing and disseminating the protocols of Zion. So he was a member of an order called the Aufbau. It's also included a number of people like Alfred Rosenberg, the chief ideologue of the Nazi Party, Eric Ludendorff, General Eric Ludendorff, was a fascinating character who was friends, you know, as is often the case with Aleister Crowley, and a whole hornet's nest of German and British conspirators that were involved with Aleister Crowley and the Zionist movement in early black propaganda. And so Boris Brassall teamed up with Henry Ford to publish and disseminate the protocols, and it's through them that the Nazis became introduced to it. And then, of course, the protocols became the basis for the Nazi final solution, based on the idea that there was a Masonic Jewish conspiracy afoot that had already succeeded in the Russian Revolution, and they were sort of creating this hysteria that, if not stopped, that it would come for Germany as well. And so in the early phases of World War II, Boris Brassall was active in the United States and active with all of the leading fascist circles, particularly like the Silver Shirts, the German American Bund, most importantly, the Klan, and the Russian branch of the Knights of Malta, known as the Order of St. John of Jerusalem. And they're known in the United States as the Shikshini Knights of Malta. This is pretty much the branch of the Knights of Malta that has been, you know, really at the heart of the conspiracy for half a century at least in the United States. And so Boris Brassall's activities contributed to the founding of the America First Committee. And it's not a coincidence that Trump repeated that phrase, because it's originally a Klan slogan. And the America First Committee evolved into the American Security Council. The American Security Council became the heart of the military industrial complex, which pushed a corporatist agenda, which we know as neoliberalism. So they were basically the real force behind the McCarthy scare, the Red Scare, as they call it as well, and the John Birch Society. So the John Birch Society is a lot less popular today, but they were sort of the Alex Joneses of the 50s. They were the main organization responsible for publishing most of the, you know, so-called conspiracy theories, research of the time. And so they were basically an arm of the Fascist International. And they highlighted a particular version of the conspiracy that focused on the Rockefellers, the Rothschild, the Council on Foreign Relations, and, of course, exempting, you know, the main organizers, and of course exempting the fact that they were tied deeply into the not only the Fascist International, but most of the conspiratorial activity. And so
you mentioned somebody there, as one of the ideologues of the Nazi Party, Alfred Rosenberg. I mean, obviously a Jewish name, and yet it's denied that he was Jewish at all. I know in various books over the years have looked into the connection between the Theosophists and the rise of the ideologies around the Nazi Party, like the Tool Society, these things around about the time, not long after the First World War. Yeah. And I think it was called Unholy Alliance, his book, that really pins the rise of this ultra-nationalist ideology between the wars on the Theosophists. But I mean, what about this figure Alfred Rosenberg? I mean, it seems unbelievable that people could say, well, this main ideologue of the Nazi Party wasn't Jewish.
Yeah, so Alfred Rosenberg apparently was a member of an order called the Asiatic Brethren. And so this order is really, really key. Most of the modern occult history, and particularly the founding of Freemasonry, goes back to the Sabbatian movement. And that's Shabbatai Zvi, who declared himself Jewish Messiah in 1666. And this is a movement that was supported and effectively disseminated, organized, orchestrated by the Rosicrucians. And Zvi caused a lot of disappointment when he converted to Islam, but still he had a large following that persisted. And so his movement transformed itself into what's known as the Frankist movement that was headed by Jacob Frank. Really, it's when you start to look at those ties that you see, the real rise of the conspiracy, particularly the Illuminati, beginning with a group called the Golden Rosicrucians. Basically, Jacob Frank's cousin or nephew, I can't remember which, his name was Moses Dobrushka, and he founded this group called the Asiatic Brethren. And the reason why they call themselves that is because they were supposedly referring to themselves as the so-called Eastern mystics that had taught the Templars their occult doctrines. So the Grand Master of the Asiatic Brethren was Carl of Hessen-Kessel. And he was a member of a family. So this family is very important because the hereditary landgraves of Hessen-Kessel go all the way back to the 12 or 1300s and an event called the Miracle of the Roses that happened to a woman called Elizabeth of Hungary. So she was part of a whole network of families that were involved in the survival of the Templars, a number of orders, particularly the Order of St. George, the Order of the Dragon, the Order of the Garter, and most importantly, the Order of the Golden Fleece again. And so these are the families that basically perpetuated this occult tradition, this Neo-Templar tradition. And it was their descendants who were responsible for supporting the mission of Martin Luther. He was the first to use the rose that was later used as the symbol of the Rosicrucians, as a five-petal rose, which is supposed to be, mimicking the five-pointed star, and is supposed to be a Ionic symbol. So the Rosicrucian movement was responsible for the founding of the Sabbatian movement, which out of which emerged the Asiatic Brethren. So the Asiatic Brethren, again, was headed by the House of Hessen-Kessel, and it's the House of Hessen-Kessel where the Rothschild family gained their start. And of course, so their influence was immense, and it was under Carl of Hessen-Kessel that the Asiatic Brethren first started to use the symbol of the swastika. And this would have been as far back as the 1700s. And so basically the swastika was used by the Asiatic Brethren to effectively identify themselves. And they evolved into, the Asiatic Brethren evolved into the Union Lodge, the Jewish Lodge of Frankfurt. And it's there really that you get the beginnings of the occult revival in the 18th century, and out of which emerged the Golden Dawn. And the Golden Dawn is, pretty much the preeminent secret occult society of the late 1800s. And that's where a lot of people get their start, most importantly, Aleister Crowley. A lot of the early founders of the Zionist movement, like Otto Kahn of Kuhn Loeb, Samuel Untermeyer, all members of the Golden Dawn who worked closely with Aleister Crowley, and particularly a guy named George Sylvester Viereck, was another guy who's unknown, but in a lot of ways, maybe even more influential than Crowley. And he was friends with Brassall. He was working with Philip Wiseman of British Intel. He was friends with Nikola Tesla, with Albert Einstein, with Sigmund Freud, and a whole crew of characters, and he was also very closely involved with the America First Committee with Boris Brassel.
Okay, well, let's get back to today and back to Alexander Dugin over in Russia. Yeah. His daughter was assassinated this week in a pretty horrific car bomb. It looks as if it was a remote control bomb. So, in other words, someone else in another car had a remote control device that set the bomb off. And the interesting thing, I mean, just a very basic thing that I noticed this morning on the BBC website is they have taken out, although it was in there yesterday, evening, they've taken out all reference to her being a journalist. Yeah. Well, she clearly was a journalist. She was actually very well known on Russian TV, on different channels, and in newspapers. She wrote quite a lot as well. And of course, the idea that the BBC are going to take this important aspect of her character out of the articles they're writing about her, it shows a sort of almost a collusion with whoever it was that assassinated her. But so who is this this woman, and particularly her father, because it may be that she has been assassinated to get to her father, who's quite influential, Alexander Dugin, who you've mentioned before on our program, is quite close to Putin.
Yeah. So there's several people who have been, you know, key figures in modern occultism. You know, so in the mid 1800s, you'd have Edward Bulwer Lytton, and after that, you have people like Aleister Crowley in the 20th century. And you know, I think 50 years from now, people who will be studying the history of occultism will be studying Alexander Dugin as being one of the leading figures. So he's really, he's considered a representative of, you know, the history of what's called traditionalism. And that's one academic way of looking at it, but more specifically, it's Cernarchism. And Cernarchism begins with Saint Yves d'Alvedre, who was connected to the families, the Russian families associated with the descendants of Karl of Hessen-Kassel, who I said, as I mentioned, was the Grand Master of the Asiatic Brethren. And so Cernarchism was one of the most important occult traditions of modern times, side by side with Theosophy. And it's basically Cernarchism, particularly as a branch that's developed in France, particularly during what would have been in the 30s. The Cernarchist movement was spearheaded by a guy named Jean Coutreau, who was working with Aldous Huxley. And the movement was eventually exposed and caused quite a scandal. So, you know, there's suggestions that the movement didn't survive. But this Cernarchist movement was very closely tied with the development of the myth of the Priory of Zion. Particularly, they were close with the AMARC, which is the American Rosicrucian tradition, and the what's called the Polaire Brotherhood. So the Polaire Brotherhood was really interested. One of the people who was connected to it was Otto Rahn, who popularized sort of the Nazi version of the Holy Grail, sort of inspired, you know, one of Spielberg's Temple of Doom, I think is what it was. So this Polaire Brotherhood, the Nazis were very committed, of course, to trying to find their Aryan heritage in Tibet. And there was a simultaneous stream that was happening in Russia at the time. A lot of occultists, again, associated with the Rosicrucian tradition, because this goes back to a hotbed of conspirators involved in St. Petersburg at the turn of the century, who were looking to Tsar Nicholas II as being the white Tsar of Shambhala. And this connected all the key occultists of the time, who again were located. This would have included, according to Richard Spencer, would have included Aleister Crowley. And so this Polaire Brotherhood, which is supposedly oracle located in Shambhala, who were basically the nine founding Knights Templar, who were looking at Shambhala, or more specifically, Agartha. So that's too much occult legend to explain, but just to say that this sort of Russian tradition, Cernarchist tradition, is really where Dugin comes from. And his entire political philosophy is founded on it. So he's created what he calls a conspirology, which is this mythology that Russia and the East represents Hyperborea, and United States, NATO, and Britain represent Atlantis. Now, he believes that the true conspiracy is not a Jewish conspiracy, but a long-term occult conspiracy between these two blocks. And he effectively believes that the end times, because this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to bring about the end times, or the Endkampf, as he likes to call it, basically using the Nazi terminology, which is going to pit Atlantis against Hyperborea. So the Polaris tradition, he believes, which survives in Russia through the creation of a Eurasian Union to offset or combat the Atlantean bloc of the United States and NATO. So basically, he is contributing to a mirror image of the conservative, neoconservative clash of civilizations. And that explains all of his activity. So this is why he has been working to create this Eurasian network, which is to unite Russia with the states of Central Asia against the United States. His work to undermine NATO, and most importantly, his orchestration of the Russian campaign to help Trump get elected.
Hang on, David, because in a way, NATO has been doing that itself, hasn't it? By having the confrontations, the big trade wars, the sailing around Taiwan as if it's just there on some sort of a holiday with the American battleships and Nancy Pelosi. Surely, actually, it's NATO and the West that are driving the Russians and the Chinese together, not Alexander Dugin.
I don't think that any of it is coincidental. I don't think it is a real opposition. This is why I think Dugin is consciously playing the game, the geopolitical game that goes back to Halford Mackinder, because that's really what it all comes down to. You know, Brzezinski was a fan as well of Halford Mackinder. It's the idea that Central Asia serves as the world pivot that provides the avenue to world domination. I think the way that Dugin explains it, he says that we don't, when he says we, he means, you know, the Eurasian network or whatever he wants to call it, or the Hyperborean bloc. He says they are not fighting the West because they hate the West. They are fighting the West because they are merely fulfilling their historical destiny as residents of the East. Right? So this has nothing to do with hating NATO or being opposed to NATO policies. It has everything to do with contributing to a dialectic, which they all seem to be creating as a means towards creating an end time scenario.
Well, okay, it could be both, David, couldn't it? I mean, because NATO, quite clearly in the Mediterranean, in Syria, etc., has been edging east and, of course, doing the same in Eastern Europe.
I think it's a dialectic. You know, what's very curious is that there's a whole story where Yeltsin basically was converted to capitalism at the Esalen Institute, right? And the Esalen Institute was, they were working very closely on their, you know, American-Russian exchange program that involved a guy named, I can't remember his first name, Jerry Golding, another Russian occultist, who happened to live on Yuzinski Lane, which is the same place where Alexander Dugin and his occult circle used to hang around in. And there's a whole, you know, network of, you know, weird connections that were involved here. But then Yeltsin is the one who appoints Putin as his successor. So, I'm not sure, you know, how you can explain these connections or what anyone's intentions are, but there's a lot of overlap here, which, you know, suggests to me that a lot of this antagonism is not really genuine.
Well, I mean, it certainly could turn genuine and more genuine. I mean, I think in Ukraine, there is most definitely, this is unfolding in a real war, David.
That's what they want. This is order out of chaos that they're creating.
Looking also at the recent revelations about Yuval Noah Harari, I know you've also done a book which is about transhumanism, the history of a dangerous idea, which is really, a tremendous way of, you know, explaining this, not just as technology, but also as an ideology, this idea of, you know, technology as almost a kind of god which we worship, you know. But, you know, this guy, Yuval Noah Harari, Harari has been really pushing this recently, even saying things like the unbelievable phrase that humans are hackable animals. Now, from a traditional point of view, first of all, we're not hackable. We've got minds of our own. We can think for ourselves. And secondly, no, we're humans, not animals. We've got a different role in the world. And that is as custodians of the planet. And we should be using our intellectual abilities to look after all the animals.
Yeah.
So what do you make of him?
I haven't followed him specifically, so I don't know the details, but I mean, that's part and parcel of transhumanism, which is effectively a Luciferian agenda. So, that's really where everything connects, because if you look at what's happening politically with the recalibration of the world, I mean, what seems to be developing is this is what's following Kissinger's plan for a multipolar order, which is exactly the phrase that Dugin is using as well. And but that's really just sort of the political maneuverings. And, simultaneously, you can see through the COVID agenda, that which is evidently part of the transhumanist agenda, the rise of AI was all part and parcel of the larger conspiracy that seems to be underway. So, to talk about humans as being hackable, what it really means is basically, it's part of sort of the cybernetic agenda of that views the mind as a biological computer. And that's basically why they see in their minds that the mind is something that can be reverse engineered, and why they'll ultimately be able to create artificial intelligence, on a scale that they consider equal to a global mind or the Masonic all-seeing eye. So I think that's, where we can see where all these things are headed. And I think it's important to keep it, to look past a lot of what is happening in the short term, to try to understand of how all these components are contributing to a larger plan.
Yeah, I mean, you and I, chatting about 6 months ago, realized that there's this guy, Nick Land, who's an accelerationist, who seems to be one of those people doing a similar thing. He's over in China at the moment, which is trying to bring about the end times. Now, obviously, for God, if you're an author of the Bible, you might be wanting to say, look, everybody watch out, because this is what the Luciferians are up to, and giving your faithful some kind of idea of what to expect. But then there's also this idea that you explore that these people are very interested in the Book of Revelation, and actually it's almost like a blueprint. They're trying to bring this about. And these accelerationists, these Nietzschean philosophers like Nick Land, seem to be almost at the core of the ideology behind bringing it about, but how? This is an incredible task they've set themselves, but it almost seems as if, there's a tiny number of people that could set humanity against itself and bring about an enormous cataclysm like that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a fascinating thread there, because it's called accelerationism, and Nick Land is effectively known for spearheading it. Popular in most of the modern neo-Nazi circles. Nick Land also praised the work of the Order of Nine Angles, and the one of the representatives of the order is Kerry Bolton, who is also associated with Dugin. And though Dugin, of course, has inspired most of the founding, a lot of these modern neo-Nazi satanic orders, and another proponent, maybe not so much of Nick Land, basically is known for also having coined the Dark Enlightenment, and that is a philosophy that has, first of all, acceleration, it goes all the way back to the Process Church, right? And that's what's important. So the Process Church inspired Charles Manson, and it's really the order that links so many people, because It links also back to, this is what I talk about in my chapter, I think it's Sex, Lies, and Videotapes, Wiretaps, that links to Roy Cohn, because the Son of Sam used to attend parties that were hosted by Roy Cohn. So basically parties of a satanic nature. And Roy Cohn was Donald Trump's mentor. And Roy Cohn is really, in the United States, he's the key leading figure of that connects to the Fascist International. He's the one who introduced Rupert Murdoch to Ronald Reagan and basically effectively began his career. And of course, Fox News is the organization which is largely responsible for the partisan divide that is currently dividing the United States and the entire push for, you know, this smutty right-wing media, which is creating or feeding the dialectic in the United States. It connects, those process church also connects to, of course, the Rosemary's Baby and that entire network that were connected to the Manson killings. It connects to Robert Evans, who was the producer of Rosemary's Baby. And he's a guy who is really at the top of the pyramid of that entire network involved in the Me Too movement, which I talk about in that chapter. So, you know, it's a very significant movement. We can't underestimate its importance. And again, the idea of accelerationism is the idea that they're trying to accelerate the coming of the end times. We have to remember that, you know, we tend to think of satanic organizations as being almost anti-Bible, but they're not really. They are Gnostics, so they believe in the reverse of the Bible. So like Dan Brown would say, by quoting William Blake, you know, where you see white, they see black. So where we see the coming as the Antichrist and wars and famine and destruction as being negatives, they see all those things as positive. So they believe in the necessity of, you know, creating the preconditions of the end times, creating the chaos, creating the destruction through acts of terrorism, through acts of violence, as a way in their minds of preparing the arrival of the Messiah. So again, you know, this leads all the way back to Nick Land also coining the so-called Dark Enlightenment, which is a very dark fascist philosophy, which is inspired Peter Thiel. And Peter Thiel is a Bilderberger, a founder of Palantir, and he is really, you know, one of the leading. He's at the forefront of, you know, in many ways of the transhumanist movement and Palantir was the organization which assisted Cambridge Analytica in breaching Facebook data, which was then used by the Russians in their campaign orchestrated by Dugin to have Trump elected.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Palantir, because I remember, must have been about 1977, lending Nick Land my copy of The Lord of the Rings. You know, that. So, yeah, he was as an individual, he was great fun to be around. He was always very challenging, you know, very, very well educated in a way which, you know, couldn't have really happened in our school, I can tell you. Yeah. And, fascinating figure. But, I mean, I'm still quite trying to get to the bottom of this, because are they saying effectively that the Jesus as the Messiah wasn't good enough, so they're going to have to bring about another one of their own making? And it seems that there's an aspect to this which is pretty troubling, which is saying, well, look, you know, we don't actually believe in God, but we believe in using the Bible against these monotheistic faiths. Yeah. And almost proving to them that there is no God, creating a war, creating mass death, and proving to everybody, look, where's your God now?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And the you know, it's a Kabbalistic goal, which is founded on the idea that man is God. And so that's why they view history as the evolution of towards secularism, which is the evolution away from religion, away from the idea of a transcendent God, to the idea that man is God. And man proves his divinity through the work of magic. And one of the goals of the cybernetics movement, you know, as explained by Norbert Wiener, who was one of the founders of the movement, is to create a golem. So this is why their goal is to create artificial intelligence, because according to Wiener, what makes God God is his ability to create life. So man becomes God once he creates life. So once we create artificial intelligence, which he equated to the Kabbalistic Golem, he believes that, well, you know, humanity becomes God. So ultimately, this is why, how, you know, all this transhumanism and AI and accelerationism all ties in together.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, how it all sort of becomes a little, is so much of this is actually biblical, as you say. I mean, the abomination of desolation, which is talked about in the book of Daniel, for example, this is, you know, exactly what you say. It's a kind of golem, the idea that you see some sort of android robot type thing animated by artificial intelligence. We've also got, of course, the mark of the beast, this idea of putting a microchip in your hand, which will then, you can go bip and buy and sell using it, and anyone that hasn't got one of those won't be able to buy or sell anything. Obviously, those people will become rather adept at using barter in order to survive, I'd imagine. Let's get back to Dugin just briefly, though, because what about, I mean, who could have done this? Surely, if Dugin is working for this fascist conspiracy over in Russia and getting things done over there, I mean, why would he be assassinated by them? Or maybe it was somebody else, his daughter, who assassinated his daughter. It doesn't really seem to make too much sense. It may be, David, that actually the Russians aren't quite as under control as the fascist conspiracy would like them to be.
Yeah. I mean, you know, studying a lot of this, the contradictions are so many. It's most of the time, it's very difficult to explain, right? Just by the fact that you looked at its conspirators who were responsible for revealing or distributing the protocols of Zion, it really starts there, right? So it's, for the most part, their activities are very difficult to understand, because what it appears to be is that they have a level of audacity which is truly astounding, and it's hard to believe that they're you know, audacity could take them to that extent. So, you know, I think that you can string all the facts together and all the connections, and you can start to the connections are demonstrable, but understanding how they fit together, that's the difficult part. And there's a lot to a certain degree, we're able to explain some of them, but I think sometimes you just get to a point where you can't. And this is where, for me, an event like this is really, really a very surprising development, because it really brings Dugin to the forefront, you know, to an extent that it really hasn't until now. He's a guy that was really relatively unknown except to academics. And so who is up to what? I think it reminds me a lot of watching the sort of this intelligence campaign to get Trump elected, and all the confusing and contradictory associations that were behind it. It was very difficult to understand who was serving who. And in this case, I think it's the same. I think it's important that we note the importance of this event, but now we need to wait and see to find out what it means, and hopefully it will start to help us understand a little bit more about the contradictory associations and why and how they take place and what they're up to.
Yeah, I mean, it seems certainly the deep state seems to have changed their mind about Trump, don't they?
It would seem like that, but I highly doubt that's the case, right? It just means if it means that it seems like it changed their minds, it just means that we didn't properly understand what they were really up to. Because they didn't. They accomplished. The funny thing is that the Koch brothers appeared to oppose Trump, when in reality they funded his entire agenda. And one of the leading accomplishments of getting Trump in power was the seizure of the Supreme Court. So Trump is expendable now. He's done his job. They now have, you know, they've achieved what Bannon called the reconstruction. He called it the destruction or reconstruction of the administrative state. Right. That was their goal. They have a depth of control now, which I believe makes, you know, presidents or a lot of politicians is effectively irrelevant. I mean, that I'm not saying that is the answer, but that is a factor to consider. crazy, silly games, it seems like.
Okay, David, what's your website? People want to either read your AutoAbK or get hold of any of these books you mentioned, including, of course, the transhumanism one, which I think is particularly interesting.
Great. Yes, so my website is Ordo Ab Chao. That's a Latin version of Order Out of Chaos. It's the dictum of the Scottish Rite Freemasons, .ca. And that's where you'll find my latest book is entirely online. I divided into six volumes, but you can also purchase it. So it's available in paperback as well as Kindle. And on my About page, you'll find links to all of my previous books. So that includes The Dying God, Black Terror, White Soldiers, Terrorism Illuminati, and as you mentioned, Transhumanism, The History of a Dangerous Idea.
I think one of the most important things you've done as well, David, is to point out how much of what we see in the alternative press is actually a form of controlled opposition. Would you agree?
Yes. So I have an entire chapter on fake news, and I was really, really shocked to see. I think, you know, the Trump election really provided the opportunity for us to see through so many of the alt-left and, you know, alternative media and sources. You know, it really showed to what extent the conspiracy operates. And I think just about everybody was exposed. You're either mainstream media and against Trump, or you're a part of this alternative media that somehow proposed that he was a legitimate option. And so I'm effectively thankful for that. You know, it starts with Alex Jones, of course. But then there's also the entire range of what they call the alt-left. And so I discuss all their connections. And surprisingly enough, of course, a lot of them are always featured on RT. A lot of them have connections to Dugin. And most importantly, a very powerful, influential organization that he's a part of called the Izborg Club, if I pronounce that correctly. And so it just shows you that, it seems that the entire spectrum is compromised. And this is why we all have to all be careful and do our own homework and avoid putting our trust, our whole trust, in anybody, and always, you know, keep a cautious degree of suspicion.
Yeah, because they want to control, and they almost do control, both sides of the chessboard. All right, thanks very much, David Livingstone, for joining us again.
Great. Thank you very much, Tony.